We're going to be in Mark chapter 10 today. There are four more Sundays left in August. Is anyone ready for August to be over? I know, school's starting, it's a bummer, but like, at least it'll start cooling down a little bit, right? A little bit. I'm excited about it. There are four more Sundays left in August, and that means that there are four more Sundays that we are going to be following Jesus around the Gospel of Mark. That's what we've been doing this summer as a community. We've been just trying to watch what Jesus is doing. We've been trying to listen to what Jesus is saying. And in general, we've been just trying to ask ourselves a question. We've been trying to ask ourselves, what would it look like for us to take this guy seriously? What would it look like for us to take Jesus seriously? Not any hypothetical, like, group of people, but us. Here. Now. In this place. What would it look like for us in Northwest Denver, in Westminster, at Bellevue, What would it look like for us to take Jesus seriously? That's what the church is, after all. I mean, it's the community of people who are learning to take Jesus seriously. The people who are learning to trust and celebrate and embody Jesus more and more and more with our lives. And as we've been entering into a new season of Bellevue Community Chapel, that's what we're wanting to enter into. We're wanting to take Jesus seriously. So that's what we're doing today. We're continuing in Mark chapter 10. I'm just going to go ahead and start reading it. Starting verse 32. They were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. "We are going up to Jerusalem," he said, "and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise." Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." "You don't know what you're asking," Jesus said. "Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Then they came to Jericho, as Jesus and his disciples together with a large crowd were leaving the city. A blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called it to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," Jesus said, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. In my Bible, we just blew through three Do any of your Bibles have like little subsections, titles above the subsections, or your digital versions of the Bible? We just blew through three of them in my Bible. Three titles of little subsections of the Bible. Mine says Jesus predicts his death for a third time. The request of James and John, and blind Bartimaeus receives his sight. But I think we need to remember, and this is always helpful when you're reading the Bible, that what we just read is all seamlessly just one, is all just seamlessly part of one story. We're two-thirds of the way through Mark's story. This is all just one story. It's the story of the good news of Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God. That's what Mark called it in his opening verse. We're about two-thirds of the way through this strange action movie where Jesus, who burst onto the scene, you know, announcing the kingdom of God, the rule and reign of God, and trashing evil, he's now, as of chapter 8, about halfway through this story, he's begun insisting that he has got to die. And at the beginning of our passage today, in verses 33 through 34, he's saying this again. He's like, I gotta go to Jerusalem to lose. I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to be killed. This is the third time, actually, that Jesus has told his disciples that's where he's headed. This is where I'm headed. I'm headed to Jerusalem right now. Verse 32, that's where they're headed towards. This is the third time, not just that Jesus told them one day back then, but this is the third time that Mark has recorded for his readers, for maybe us, that this is what following Jesus is all about. There's been a 180, and all of a sudden, this is the third time that Mark's recording. This is what following Jesus is about. This is how Jesus uses all his energy. This is how Jesus exhausts his life. He's not going to keep just turning up the volume on the action, you know, on the miracles and fireworks and the displays of power. That's not what he's going to keep doing. The crowds that were swelling back here for the first half of the Gospel of Mark, they were swelling and, you know, buzzing and pressing in. They were just teeming with excitement. They basically vanished. They basically vanished in the second half of the last eight chapters of Mark's gospel. And now you've got this passage at the beginning. You've got a band of astonished disciples, verse 32. Astonished is the way the NIV says it. They're baffled. They're confused. They're, oh, what's going on? You know, they have no idea what's going on. And a crowd of people, maybe us following Jesus, who are afraid, just afraid. And Jesus just keeps telling them, this is what's going to happen. This is how I'm going to bring about the best kind of good. I know it's counterintuitive, but this is the way that things are going to become as God wants them to be. It's not going to happen like you expect. It's not going to look like God, you know, striking the world with apocalyptic violence and making the world right. It's not going to look like the Jewish people rising up in revolution against Rome or whatever power happens to be, you know, ruling the world at that time. It's not even going to be that obvious that God has established his king over the world when it does happen. But trust me, this is what's going to happen, Jesus keeps insisting. The Son of Man, that mysterious and powerful divine-like figure that you've all read about in the scroll of Daniel, he is about to establish the rule and reign of God over the entire world. It's about to happen, and it's going to look like the Son of Man being delivered into the hands, this is verse 33, it looks like the Son of Man being delivered into the hands of the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and who are going to hand him over to the Gentiles. The rulers of the people of God are going to hand the Son of Man over to the rulers of the known world, that the church and the state are going to execute me. That's what Jesus is saying, the church and the state, they're going to execute me. But 3 days later, you're going to see something new. And then verse 35, we move into like this next little section. And let's just read it. Verse 35, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Whatever we ask. What? That's a gutsy little proposition they're making right here. We just want you to do whatever we ask for you. We'd like a blank check, please, Jesus. You know, just go ahead and agree that you're going to do what we want, and then we'll ask you. And, well, to be fair, These are two of Jesus' closest friends. These are two of Jesus' closest disciples. You know, they went last week. They went up on Mount Tabor. They saw Jesus go nuclear. They saw Jesus standing in for God, talking to Elijah and Moses. These guys are two guys who are taking Jesus very, very seriously. Maybe these guys get it by now. Maybe they get it by now. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. So let's hear them out. Verse 36. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." Oh, this is infuriating. Good grief. You're going to Jerusalem to die, Jesus? Okay, that's great. Can we get cushy cabinet positions when you take over? You know, if you're going to be in charge, we'd like some sweet seats of power. That would be pretty awesome. You know, probably like, I don't know, 4 weeks of vacation, some time off, maybe a personal charge account, you know, business account, so we can, one of us second in command, one of us third in command. You know, one of us at your right, one at your left. What do we want, Jesus? We want to rule the world. What do we want, Jesus? We want to rule the world. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating when we read about the disciples in the Gospel of Mark. Why don't they get it? Why don't they get it? What on earth is their problem? How could they still not understand? He said it three times. That's not what's going to be happening. At every turn in Mark's story, the disciples have very, very short memories. They always seem to be forgetting what Jesus said, and they seem to be thinking and dreaming and arguing in a completely different direction than Jesus. And Jesus, oh, bless his heart, Jesus, he answers with a very polite, a very patient no. Jesus says to them in verse 38, he says, "Can you drink the cup that I'm about to drink? Can you be baptized? Can you be plunged into what I'm about to be plunged into?" And they said, verse 39, they say, "Yeah, sure, no problem. Yeah, we got it. We're good. We're gold, Jesus. Let's do it." Well, Jesus says, "You're going to get your wish. You're going to get your wish. You're going to end up being plunged into suffering for my sake. You're going to wind up dying for me, announcing my resurrection. But my right and my left, they've been prepared for other people. They've been prepared for other people. I can't give those to you." Spoiler alert. If you want to see who winds up at Jesus' right and his left, just turn to chapter 15 and you'll find that it's two criminals on crosses. Just spoiler alert. And then the other disciples, verse 41, they hear about this. "Oh, what? James and those sons of Zebedee, they're doing it again." And they get really upset. They get really indignant. "Who do those guys think that they are? We are a team. We will be ruling together. The 12 of us, we will be the ones in charge together. Not you guys, but like us, all of us." I would imagine. Maybe they're all fighting, infighting to try to get they're all scrambling for this position. I don't know. And then Jesus has, that's not really the point. Jesus has to remind them again. Jesus is very patient, which ought to be good. That's good news in itself for all of us. Jesus is very patient. "Look, the one that you've been waiting for, that you've been reading about in the scroll of Daniel, that Son of Man who's going to make things as God wants them to be on the earth, the Son of Man is a servant. The Son of Man is a servant. So you got to stop this nonsense about being great, or about conquering, or about ruling the world. That's literally what everybody else, since Alexander the Great actually did it, since he actually conquered the great, the Gentiles, those who were regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over everybody. Everybody's trying to conquer the world. Not so with you. If you want to be great, well, try being like me. Try being a servant." And Mark is a brilliant storyteller. Have I said this before? Mark is a very smart storyteller. He's a brilliant storyteller. Because notice the story, these like little titles actually kind of throw us off a lot of times. We miss some of like the one seamless story. Maybe a better title for right now for this one would be The Request of James and John and then The Request of Blind Bartimaeus. That might be a better title right there. Just cross it out and put that. That's, I think, a better title. Because Jesus and his baffled disciples, and the frightened crowd, they continue heading to Jerusalem, and they're getting close. They're 15 miles out now. They've come to Jericho, verse 46. And a blind man who people called Bartimaeus begins calling out for Jesus. I mean, that's, and Mark just makes the side comment right here in verse 36. It means son of Timaeus. He's just letting whoever his original audience know, whoever his original audience was, know, hey, that's what Bartimaeus means. It means son of Timaeus. And this son of Timaeus, he has heard the rumors of action hero Jesus. He's heard the rumors of action hero Jesus, who can banish evil and sickness and darkness and brokenness. The rumors of this guy have reached the ears of the son of Timaeus. And so the son of Timaeus begins calling out to the son of David. That's what's happening here. That's one of the titles, by the way, of the long-awaited Messiah, would be son of David. That's who the Jews have been longing for and hoping for. Back here at the hinge point, the halfway hinge point of Mark's gospel, Peter, the leader of the disciples, had confessed that Jesus was the king. Jesus was the Messiah. He'd confessed that. And the way that this blind man is calling out for Jesus has kind of the same effect as that confession. It's, you're the one we've been waiting for. You're the one who will rescue us. You're the one who will liberate us, who will heal us. While you're passing by, Messiah, while you're passing by, son of David, have mercy on me too. Have mercy on me. And the blind man gets his wish. Jesus hears those who call out to him. Always. Jesus hears those who call out to him. And so Jesus calls back to him, verse 39. And the crowds are always fickle. Crowds are always fickle. I don't know, mobs of people. They're always fickle. They're always easily swayed. One minute this crowd was saying, verse 48, you know, quiet, shut it. And then the next minute the crowd is saying, oh yeah, Timaeus' son, yeah, cheer up, on your feet, come on, he's calling for you, come on. And so that's what Bartimaeus does. He jumps to his feet, he tosses aside his cloak, verse 50, and he makes his way to Jesus. Tossing aside his cloak is kind of a big deal. That's kind of a big deal. That's his livelihood. That's his life. It's not that Jericho gets really cold. It's that's his livelihood. That's his fishing net. You know, that's when you're blind, especially blind in a crowd, you don't casually throw away anything. You keep track of everything, especially something as important as your cloak, because this cloak is probably the thing that he spread on the ground so that people could toss charity and alms and coins his way, and so that he could collect it. He can't see, so he gathers up all of what he's got at the end of the day in this is his fishing net. This is the way he provides for himself. This is the way that this guy fishes for coins. He's got a trust in Jesus because going back to begging is going to be tricky without a cloak. He's got a lot of faith in Jesus to be tossing this thing aside and just heading over to Jesus. And then Jesus asks this man a familiar question. If we're just reading this as one story, if we're reading this, I think the way that Mark wants us to read this, Jesus asks a familiar question. What do you want me to do for you? It's the same question that he asked James and John just a tick ago. You know, Mark is a brilliant storyteller. He's arranged all these events of Jesus' life. He's fashioned them, he's framed them in such a way that we can remember the request that just happened back then and maybe just provoke something in us. Maybe provoke something in us of like Jesus asking us this question too. What do you want me to do for you? I mean, that's at the heart of it all, isn't it? That's real, like if, like, let's cut the, I was going to say, let's cut it for a second. Well, I was just remembering we had kids in here. I wasn't going real naughty. But let's cut to the chase. Let's cut to the chase. This is the heart of things. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus is now, we had talked a few weeks ago that Jesus, that there were all kinds of questions swirling around in the Gospel of Mark. These questions that just hang out there. And they're really questions that tell us something really like, who is this that can forgive sins? Who is this that commands the wind and the waves? And they're these questions that just kind of hang out there, and they tell us something profoundly important about Jesus. I think this is a question hanging out there on the lips of Jesus that tells us something profoundly important about us. What do you want me to do for you? What is it that you want? Let's cut to the chase. What is it? What is it that we want? What is it that's driving us day in and day out? You know, what is it that, what are the concerns that, I mean, we all, this is kind of like we gather together in church, but then like we go out and we have lives, you know, like lives we live out there. What are the concerns that consume your thoughts? What are the activities that consume your time? What are the plans that consume all of your energy? What is it you're aiming at? What does a happy life look like for you? Most of us don't think about this very much. Most of the time we're just bouncing in 1,000 different directions, and we only ever have a vague sense, kind of what we want. I just want to avoid as much pain as I can and get as much pleasure as I can. I don't know. I think most of us, most of the time, have just kind of a vague answer that's something along the lines of what James and John are saying. I just want to rule the world. I don't know quite what that looks like, but I just want to rule the world. Maybe not the entire world. Maybe I'll settle for my little world. I just want to rule my world. I just want to rule the world. But I sure do. I just want to control it. I just want to like manage it. I just want to rule it. And if Jesus is a way that I can rule the world, if I have to sit at his right hand or even his left, I'll take that. I'll do it. Jesus, I just want you to help me rule the world. But that is a request that Jesus cannot grant, that Jesus will not grant and does not grant. Because even the Son of Man has not come to rule the world in the way that we expect. The Son of Man has come to save the world by giving himself up for the world. If we're looking for Jesus to help us, if we're looking for Jesus to help us rule the world, to help us rule our private individual little worlds, we're going to be endlessly, endlessly disappointed. But Bartimaeus doesn't want to rule the world. Bartimaeus wants to see the world. Bartimaeus wants to see the world. And that is a request that Jesus can grant. That is a request that Jesus will grant. That is a request that Jesus still grants. He still grants. For Bartimaeus, at this particular moment in human history, he found that his corneas and his retinas and his optic nerves all of a sudden suddenly started working. But Mark isn't just telling us a story about like the miraculous power of Jesus and like wanting to make us marvel at it or something like that. He's also giving us a picture, I think, a picture right here of with Bartimaeus. He's giving us a picture of what it really looks like for us to take Jesus seriously. What does it look like for us to take Jesus seriously? Well, Jesus sees this man's trust in him. He's tossing aside his faith in him, and it gives him a new ability to see the world. And then the Son of David says, go, your faith has healed you. But the son of Timaeus doesn't go anywhere. He doesn't go anywhere. On the contrary, Bartimaeus follows. He follows Jesus. That's the way he uses his newfound sight. That's the way he uses his newfound freedom. That's the way he uses his newfound sense of the world. I'm going to follow Jesus down the road, down the hodos is what it, down the path, down the way. This is the way. Jesus is on the way. It's a loaded word. Bartimaeus can see the world, not merely on like some physical level. I mean, to be sure, but that helps you leap to your feet and be able to, you know, follow Jesus down the road. But he is following Jesus down a road. He's got a sight now that he can comprehend what he should do with his life. I can see what this world is about. I can comprehend, and I am going to receive from Jesus, and I'm going to follow Jesus down this path of self-giving, sacrificial, almost, it looks like suicidal love that's taking him to Jerusalem. I'm going to follow him. And there's nothing that he would rather do than follow Jesus down this path. This is central to what following Jesus is all about. This is central to what following Jesus is all about. Following Jesus is about receiving a new sight. It's about receiving a new sight, a new way of seeing the world. We begin to realize that Jesus, in exhausting his own life for love of the world, he might not be crazy. Jesus, in the Son of Man, in giving his life to serve and to save others, he might not be the blind one. He might not be the stupid one. It might just be us. It might just be we who can't see. It might just be we who can't see. We who are obsessed, absolutely obsessed with ruling our little worlds, who think that the happiest kind of life is going to be found when we can control everything and we've got enough money so that people serve us. Customer service, that makes the world of the West run, doesn't it? Customer service, people serving us, being a consumer, being able to get whatever I want. If I could just have enough money and enough vacation time and enough fill in the blank of whatever it is that we want, then I'll finally have a happy life. We who race through most of our days, blind to those around us most of the time, and consumed with ourselves, it might just be we who can't see. And worse than that, it's a little worse than that, because Jesus, I think, is every day asking each and every one of us individually and even as a community, what is it that you want me to do for you? And most of the time, we're too blind to even ask for sight. Most of the time, we say, I just want to rule the world. I can't even recognize what real and lasting life might look like. I don't know why we get frustrated with the disciples here in Mark, because we are the exact same. We are the exact same. We walk through life most of the time just thinking, oh, if I could just get that or have that or do that or be in that, or if I could just rule the world, then that would be the kind of life that I'm looking for. And we treat Jesus like a vending machine or like a magic eight ball looking for an answer sometimes, or like a financial planner or a therapist or a life coach. We're asking Jesus to just help us rule and manage our world a little bit better. But Jesus hasn't come to make us rulers. Jesus hasn't come to make us rulers. Jesus has come to give us sight so that we can follow him on the way and become like him. The Son of Man is a servant, and he's come to make us servants. Jesus has come to give us sight so that we can serve. Because that is where real life is found. Not in ruling, but in serving. The question is, what are we requesting from Jesus? That's the question, I think, for us as a church, if we want to take Jesus seriously, ask ourselves, what are we requesting from Jesus? Are we asking Jesus to help us rule our little worlds? Are we asking Jesus to help us rule the world? Or are we asking Jesus to help us see the world? Are we asking Jesus to give me, is this the prayer of our hearts? Give me what I need so that I can follow you down the road, so that I can follow you on the way, and so that I can serve the world, so that I can serve those around me. If we want to take Jesus seriously, we've got to start becoming the kind of people who plead with Jesus daily. Son of David, have mercy on me. I want to see. If you're looking for something to begin practicing throughout the week, Maybe we could probably do worse than learning to practice praying that prayer. Jesus, help me to see. Five words. Five words. Jesus, help me to see. In the midst of my routine, in the midst of my callousness, in the midst of those, while I'm around those people, while I'm struggling in that area, Jesus, help me to see. And Jesus, help me to serve. Jesus, help me to see. And Jesus, help me to serve. This table is the place that we come each week to see. This table is the place we come each week to see, to actually, because we actually see. We actually use our optic nerves and our retinas and our corneas. We actually see something when we come to this table. We actually see and taste and touch tangible reminders of God's grace and his self-giving love about what God is like. This is what we believe that God is like, that on the night he was betrayed, the Lord Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, saying, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me." The Son of Man gives himself as a ransom. Here, his body's broken, his blood's poured out, not to make us rulers, but to mold us slowly into servants. The Son of Man came to make us like himself. He came to make us like himself. Servants who can see the world clearly and begin to taste the life of resurrection, lives of self-giving love. In just a couple of moments, you're going to be invited to come down to the table to receive. That's what we do at the table. That's what the Christian life is. We receive. That's what the Christian life, I'm redacting that. That's what all of life is learning to receive grace from the hand of God. You're going to receive from this table, you'll receive a cracker, you're going to dip it into some juice, and then you can return to your seats. This table is open. This table is open to anyone willing to confess their blindness and who wants to truly see the world. So as we come this morning, may we be granted the wisdom to stop asking Jesus to help us rule the world. May we be given a new way of seeing the world, an endurance to ask for new sight every single day. And may we cast aside both our delusions of grandeur and even our beggar's cloak, so that we can follow Jesus into his unending life of self-giving love.